Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He's a world-renowned zombie scholar, professor of zombies in popular media, and co-author of the book Zombie Mania, one of the first exhaustive guides to zombie cinema. He's Dr. Arnold T. Blumberg, the Doctor of the Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 92 of Doctor of the Dead. I'm the Doctor of the Dead himself, Dr. Arnold T. Blumberg, and a few things have changed since the last time we got together, and I need to explain that to everybody before we move on, but I'll try to keep it short. Basically, in the last couple episodes, we have unfortunately lost our co-host and previous Doctor of the Dead podcast producer, Scott Allen Woodard. Scott has gotten very busy in the last year or so working on a number of role-playing game projects. He has many other things on his plate, including developing the Flash Gordon role-playing game for Pinnacle Entertainment, and he's been working on that for quite a while. A Kickstarter for the project is imminent, but if you're regular listeners, you may have noted that the last time the two of us were together, we did an episode devoted to the Night of the Living Dead remake from 1990. That was episode 90. And then you might have also noticed that last time we just basically did a 20-30 minute thing where I caught you all up on some of the things I was doing. Scott was able to put that episode together, but he wasn't even able to join me to record that because he was so busy. And unfortunately, for now at least, we decided the best thing to do is for him to focus on the things that he's doing. And I'm going to keep going here with Doctor of the Dead and keep you all up to date on all of my thoughts on the latest in the world of zombies. And we have a lot to talk about. It's just a shame that we don't have Scott. However, I am not alone. And so consider this Doctor of the Dead 2.0, because joining me now and for the foreseeable future is accidental Hellraiser scholar Natalie B. Litovsky.
I got to get that on business cards, I think.
You do. And first, explain to everybody why I called you that, what that's about.
I had a whim of an idea a couple years ago. I had a long weekend and, I don't know, a feeling that I needed to torture myself with something, and decided to spend a long weekend watching every single Hellraiser movie ever made in order. That was three a day.
That's impressive.
Those who wanted the math. And I did a whole write-up of the entire series over on my blog, positivelynatalie.com, which has been dormant for a little while.
The new posts, you mean, though.
Posts have been dormant for a little while, but the Hellraiser post is what has gotten the most traffic out of anything that I've ever written over there. And it's sort of my own play-by-play of what I think of each movie, but also how I think they hold up as a Hellraiser movie as opposed to just as a horror movie.
And every once in a while, it seems like that article pops back up again. I mean, I know I've shared it a couple times, but like recently you even saw a comment pop up on it for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
Somebody found it.
Somebody was asking if I was going to add my thoughts on the latest straight-to-video Hellraiser that will be coming out.
Which will be the second Doug Bradley-less. Yeah. Doesn't sound good. But anyway.
But, you know, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And I'll write about it. Because I like torturing myself.
And to be fair, you know, I sat through them all with you because I thought this is the best way to watch them is with someone who has already been through it. And that was quite a journey going through that whole series.
Well, I could also warn you as to when you were going to find something just to be completely horrible.
Which was most of them, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really a large
portion. But not Doug
Bradley.
He's always awesome.
No, Doug Bradley's great. Even when he just shows up to collect the check, he gives it 110%.
Yeah.
So basically, Natalie will be joining me for Doctor of the Dead, and we're going to pick things up at, well, before we do that, I will say that this episode coincides with the return of Z Nation, and we've been following Z Nation on the Doctor of the Dead show since the very beginning. In fact, we'll save this for another time maybe, but that's actually how Natalie and I met, is both watching Z Nation and tweeting about it. We've been following it since the beginning here on the show. And just now, as any of you that are Z Nation fans listening know, They have just debuted their season 4 premiere episode, which was titled Warren's Dream. But first, I just wanted to make a little mention of the fact that we lost one of the giants of the genre. And although I know this would be an episode in and of itself, I wanted to at least acknowledge on Doctor of the Dead the passing of George A. Romero, the father of the modern zombie. In recent months, I've done guest appearances, I guess you'd call it that, on Jason Kibasi's Walking Dead cast and also on Horror Honey's radio. And in both of those cases, we talked about Romero a lot. And obviously, I use Romero's work in so many of my classes, and I just wanted to at least acknowledge his passing and the fact that we have now lost someone who, for all intents and purposes, created the modern zombie for so many people. And without him, there would have been no Walking Dead and probably no Z Nation either. And we're going to jump in with Z Nation Season 4 and Warren's Dream. And when we last left off in Z Nation, they really did construct a cliffhanger that seemed impossible to get out of.
A literal cliffhanger.
Yes.
Cliffhanger. Or like a cliff diver.
Cliffhanger to the point where people were falling off the cliff. Yes. Yeah. And I think I'm not a fan of time jumps, which seems to become a more and more common theme in a lot of these shows. But I think in this case, it was a rare occasion where I felt the time jump was a good idea.
I think the time jump forward here worked a lot better for them than when they had the episode that started season 3 where they did the time jump backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, well, as any of you that know, you know, it kicks off with that caption 2 years later and things have gotten worse. And 2 years is quite a gap, but I think it affords them an amazing opportunity in a show that, for all of its inventiveness, could burn out, to give them an opportunity to reinvent themselves a little bit before they reach that point. And I don't know, what were your reactions to the, there's a great many changes as we like pick everything up with everyone.
I mean, I think that hypothetically, what this means is that anybody who is left anywhere in the world, maybe besides Zona, but we'll get to that. I mean, anybody who is left out there has to be a pretty fierce survivor.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, yeah, they've eliminated basically everybody but the fittest to, at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, of course, leaves us, well, I mean, we'll jump around a little bit. And
we're the luckiest, I guess.
We've often jumped around on the show, but like when we start picking up with some of the regulars, like Doc, for instance, that's a prime example right there. This is a guy that, like, as gentle a soul as he is, he's clearly a fierce fighter. So he was somebody we knew would make it. He would survive, you know, even though he needs a trim. He needs a bit of a trim at this point.
I don't think so. I think it's a good look for him.
I know. It's a shame that he immediately wants to cut it. It just looks great. And it instantly reminded me of the episode where he was sort of like channeling a spirit self and going through that Native American thing and everything. I'm thinking, this is good. This is Doc like at his earthiest, but he lets it go. But yeah, so I would agree. It's like we're talking about these are the best of the best in terms of who's out there. But then, of course, we've got Zona, where theoretically you have a lot of the absolute worst, the rich, the elite, the 1%, you know, the people who couldn't help themselves, you know, no matter what, who somehow managed to luck into being in a sheltered place, which I give like all of 5 minutes before this comes down.
Well, I mean, they've been there hypothetically for what, 8 years at this
point?
Yeah,
that's the thing. Are we supposed
Murphy's been there now for 2, Murphy and Warren, but she talks about, you know, having, it's been 8 years since the start of all of this.
Yeah. And are we supposed to believe then that Zona, well, I guess it's not necessarily that Zona was created immediately, but something had to have been there.
I got a theory.
Yeah.
We can get to it a little later.
Okay. All right. You want to jump into it now?
Well, here's the thing about Zona.
Okay.
It is very well built.
Yeah.
It is very well stocked, obviously, because they've been living for 8 years there and they're still like having fancy dinners and drinking champagne and, you know, no one looks like they're starving and everyone is happy and probably pretty well medicated. And they even have a sort of a museum of relics where they've taken, you know, what they would, I guess, arguably call the best bits of humanity to save, including Elvis's last suit. And
they mentioned Marilyn Monroe, too.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much of Zona, we talked about this, feels like it's a creepy 50s kind of conception of what a utopia would be.
So, I mean, they have this whole place built.
Yeah.
And obviously, they didn't build it during the apocalypse. This was already built. So my theory is that what we're going to find out later is that the founders of Zona were, in fact, directly responsible for everything that has happened so far.
Okay.
That this was their attempt to essentially, well, reset humanity.
Okay. So you're thinking that the reset is not just a plan to try to start things over again in the wake of the apocalypse. You think the reset is actually, the apocalypse was part of it.
Yes.
That this was the culling the, all those awful people.
Because he makes the offhanded comment to Warren that they're going to want her in the gene pool.
Right.
And like nobody says things like that offhandedly unless they've already thought about sort of structuring a new gene pool for society.
Yeah. And we do have as a nice little nod to the Dr. Strangelove-esque aspect of that, that we got that Nazi looking guy who likes to clap with the back of his hand and is experimenting with a zombie hand at the end. So that could be part of it too. Yeah, that there's
possibly
genetic engineering going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I can certainly see that. And it's also worth noting, by the way, that as part of like this the show, in creating the idea of the reset, now another ongoing plot element slash mystery, as well as all the mystery related to Zona, it feels very much like there's sort of a fictional and a real world aspect to that too, because the show itself is of course going through a bit of a reset. We're experiencing that in the course of the show. First, we have Murphy, who in the 2 years since we last saw him has basically become Keith Allen. And I just love the idea that Keith probably said, you know, I never thought the show would go on this long. Can we not do the makeup anymore or something like that? But I think I told you like a day or so ago, I just have this feeling that before season 4 is over, he's going to slip into some new mutation. Like, I feel like in a couple episodes, he's going to start picking at something on his ear or something's going to happen.
Well, especially because Lucy is still blue.
Yeah.
And Warren has, like, white hair.
Yes.
So, I mean, other people still have, like, the trappings of it.
Yeah, and we know that the Warren benefited from the bullet that passed through Murphy. And I mean, nice little nods of logic to the weird structure of their universe that they have. Lucy, I'm going to be charitable and say, let's say Lucy is a nice homage to Dawn of the Dead zombies, because there's no other way to really justify that blue on that poor girl. And the thing is, the makeup on the show has been impressive. Like, whenever they do like real close-ups of Murphy back during his blue period, it was very nuanced. It had like a texture to it and like a thing. And she just looks like she's been just like padded down with like blue paint.
Although I guess the idea is that's not like a transitional phase for her.
That's just who she is.
That's just who she is.
Okay.
That Murphy has been kind of constantly in mutation.
Sure.
And shifting and changing and things that he can and cannot do. And, you know, the strangeness with his skin. There is a period of time where just like all his hair was falling out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's still, I guess his body has been processing all of this on a continual cycle.
Sure.
Whereas she's just sort of born in a certain way.
Okay.
Which maybe is, I guess, a reasoning behind the flatness of it, that it's not a transitional thing. It just
it's
is.
Just her.
But I agree. I still think it would be nice to see. It's sort of like if you're going to do blue as a skin tone, then do blue as a skin tone.
Yeah.
It's like give it a bit of variance in the same way that actual skin tone.
Yeah, well, again, exactly that. That's right. It's like our skin is not, if you actually like Photoshop somebody and made them all exactly the same tone throughout, you'd have a plastic mannequin because people don't look that way. And that's, but I mean, but it's a minor point though in comparison to a lot of the other stuff. And it is interesting too. We get very little like zombie activity in this one because we're spending a lot of time in Zona in this opener, which I actually found refreshing. And I think we both mentioned every time this episode went out of Zona, it somehow became a little less interesting to us this time around. It was kind of more invigorating to be in this new environment. And I kind of like the sort of near futuresque, vaguely dystopian vibe of the Zona world.
Yeah, I was saying it basically felt like what every like 40s, 50s, 60s even era sci-fi movie thought the year 2000 would be like.
Yeah.
Sort of like this was their projection that everything is always bright and it's very crisp and everything is, I don't know, I guess angular and there's nothing extra. It's like there's only just as much as you need.
It's a nice way of putting it.
And nothing else.
I also love the fact, I know we talked about this, that somehow, and obviously the makers of the show feel this way too, somehow the vision of a perfect 50s era utopian American neighborhood with everyone smiling at one another, greeting one another every morning, going off to play doubles tennis and all that, is somehow immediately creepy and horrific and something to be suspicious of.
Yeah, it's like as soon as they're walking down the street, you're like, oh, that is not right.
None of this is right.
No.
It's like no one can be this nice and friendly. Something is horribly wrong. And I love that more than ever, it seems, Warren has become our point of view character and the one person we can most certainly rely on to be the center and the person saying this needs to be fixed or something is wrong, which she's kind of always been. But I felt there were two things in the episode that really underscored how important Warren is as the center of this story more than ever. One is the opening of this episode that reintroduces Warren 2 years after the beginning of her coma was, let's face it, and I don't care because they did a nice job of it, but let's face it, lifted entirely from the opening of Resident Evil. And frankly, any other story that involves using a POV character that awakens into the story, and that includes Rick Grimes in Walking Dead, Jim in 28 Days Later, and of course the one that in many ways inspired it all, and I can't remember the name now, but in Day of the Triffids, in the novel Day of the Triffids, where a lot of that came from. But certainly aesthetically, they also based a lot of that opening specifically on the Resident Evil film, the stark white, her trying to find her way and stumbling. She's wearing a little more clothes than Mila Jovovich was, but they wanted that. Although she's wearing the clear heels. I don't know what that's about.
I think we should, in fact, just pause and touch upon the fact that she's been in a coma for 2 years, but before they wrapped her in the plastic pod, they made sure that they sculpted her eyebrows.
Yes.
They put on the false eyelashes.
Sure.
Gave her just like a little bit of a smoky eye. And put on the vinyl heels.
She's got to look good.
She's got to look good. Because they know that anyone who's got to punch their way out of a coma pod obviously is going to make an entrance into the room.
Yeah. Needs to look hot doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which she does.
Which she does.
But it's always amazing to me. And the thing is, this is not something I really necessarily expect or want even from Z Nation. It's like it's always kind of been like that. It's always been a little tongue-in-cheek about how polished everyone still can manage to be during the apocalypse.
They worked a joke in between it. What was it, Addy and 10K? How they like do each other's,
they like pluck each other's eyebrows.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you compare it to say 28 Days Later or Walking Dead. It's like waking up in those hotel zone is like a hotel room.
There you go.
But waking up in a hospital bed, They are, you know, grimy. They're in the hospital gown.
Oh, they're
still
grimy.
Attached to the, not on purpose. Attached to the IVs, have trouble walking because you get up and your muscles have, you know, atrophied a bit and you stumble around.
Although I remember there was like a clickbait article years ago that wasn't entirely uncalled for, though, that pointed out how all these shows suffer from, maybe not as far as C Nation does, but all of them suffer from the same kind of cosmetic missteps. Like years ago, there was an article about why do all the women in The Walking Dead still have shaved armpits? And it's like, where, you know, why are they doing this? Why would they still be, if we're meant to believe that they're willfully continuing to groom, you know, why would they be doing that? And there was like elements of the cosmetics of it that it's just like, well, that's because this is the real world part that they're not going to let go of, and they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's not always the apocalypse, though. It drives me crazy when things that are historically set.
Yes.
Involve like very sort of gaunt, cleanly shaven ladies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it was like the 1500s, you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's not just the apocalypse that does it. But in any case, Z Nation has always had a certain stylistic quality to it,
mm-hmm.
Which this fits into, because a lot of times I really do want that sort of accuracy. I want them waking up disoriented and wobbly legged and,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking like they've been beat up in their sleep. And,
sure.
You know, but it also wouldn't be Z Nation if she didn't like gracefully emerge from a pod and just put those vinyl heels on the floor.
Yeah.
Grab a lab coat and for some reason a sledgehammer that someone has left in the lab.
That's going to happen.
It's going to happen. And like go creep around the hallway.
Yep, absolutely. And going back to a few other characters, I mean, we mentioned Doc and we meet up again with 10K and Red. We get a little bit of a thing about 5K. I'm not convinced that kid isn't going to turn up again at some point. I think they're deliberately playing with that. But you mentioned how there's the conspicuous absence in the premiere episode anyway of Citizen K and
Kaya.
And Kaya, yeah. But obviously we know they'll be back. So,
well, especially because they've made a point of saying that that core group of characters, plus their new military friends, are intending to go north. That
yes.
They're going into British Columbia and they're going to go into the cold. And obviously, since 10K and Kaya were, or 10K, Citizen Z,
yeah,
and Kaya were stationed up there to begin with, like that's sort of our big reunion point.
Although, if I'm actually just remembering again now, they did the whole thing where he flew all the way down, landed, met everybody, and then leaves.
With her uncle.
That's right. Yeah. Again, Z Nation. I guess we'd give them a pass on that. And, of course, we mentioned Lucy, and got to mention, of course, that her companion in her journey right now is Addie, who we now discover has lost an eye. And they did a very nice job of giving us a glimpse of her eye, although I did note also that this means, I guess, that she's now like eyeless buddies with Carl over in the Walking Dead universe.
Is it the same eye?
I think it's the same side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And although she has a more stylish eye patch. And here's the thing. When we were watching the episode, we were a little thrown by the telepathic contact, except that on Twitter, I don't know if you saw it, and we'd have to go back and look.
Mm.
Apparently, there was a very conspicuous shot that somehow we both didn't notice that showed that Addie was bitten. Lucy bit her, like Murphy would bite. So they're connected now.
Gotcha.
Although apparently in a benevolent way. In a beneficial way for them both. But apparently at some point, and I guess we'll probably get a fill in on that.
Probably when she got shot through the eye.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing there was some healing that was needed.
Yeah. So apparently the two of them are linked, and that explains that. And we just didn't see it, but some people were noticing, wait a minute, Addie has a bite. And it's like, oh, really? And I feel really bad now if I'm missing the fact that, no, it couldn't have been around the eye. That would be silly. But then it's Z Nation, so I don't know. Let us know, folks, if you know where the bite was so I can go back and look again. But I'm sure that by the next episode, we'll probably get filled in on that. And I'm trying to think, what other people, is there anybody we're missing in the core group that we caught up with? I don't think so. 10K and Red are living the high life in a little treehouse until Doc tells them. Basically, they introduced the new theme, which is some of the team are going to head to New America. But of course, we also have the very creepy Zona, And I guess we should mention some of the new people involved. We get only one scene with him so far, but one of the newcomers this year is none other than Henry Rollins, who has a really cute little scene where he plays a Marine who evidently takes a very personal physical role in making sure people with him are feeling good and like hands out hugs. And I'm not sure what this character is going to be about, but apparently they're the ones that are coordinating the refugee effort to go to Numerica.
And I think you can really only go two ways with a character like that. Either he's just a genuinely good guy who wants to hug people, or he's a complete nutball. Which, at this point in the apocalypse, it's like a 50-50 chance.
I'd like to predict right now that I'd kind of like it if Henry Rollins turns out to be one of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that given his past and a lot of his other roles, it would be kind of nice to see him playing a character that's, you know, a feel-good kind of guy. So I don't know. And I also think that since Zona seems to have a pretty strong handle on being the malevolence for the season, you know, unless something happens where he's somehow involved. But there's certainly no end of creepiness coming out of Zona. So it'd be kind of nice if maybe the Numerica thing, if it turns out to be a failure, fine. But if it just doesn't turn out to be yet another sinister project of some sort, like maybe it's an attempt. But I was thinking, did we remember everybody? And I just realized we did forget someone, which is I can't remember her name, Dr. May, I can't remember. I normally have these written down, folks. I didn't, but then I guess it also says something.
She was also on screen for about like 30 seconds.
Yeah, and I never really felt that she really added all that much to the show, and I'm not sure she does now. It's just there's not much there to that character, I don't feel.
Not yet. It's hard to say. I mean, she has the potential to fill an important role because of that core group that is still together now, sort of out in the wilderness. She's the only one of them that has military training.
Okay.
And she's also an actual doctor and not just someone who's called doctor. So she has actual medical skills.
I wouldn't know anything about that, by the way. Yeah, you know, I have an actual doctor paper, so.
So I hear.
I'll show it to you. That's just as proof.
Okay, well, that was meant more so as talking about Doc.
No, I understand.
He's the kind of Doc you meet at like 3 a.m. on a street corner and not the kind of.
He's a good Doc, though.
He's a good Doc.
We like Doc. And I also have to throw in another mention for another newcomer in this episode, and one that I'm genuinely very happy to see, and hopefully his contribution will continue to be meaningful and entertaining, because I think in his first episode he was already great, and that's the living legend Michael Berryman, one of the true icons of horror cinema and entertainment. And, you know, many people probably remember him best from things like The Hills Have Eyes, but I can't even begin. Look him up on IMDb. Look at all the things he's done. Convention regular around the world. And also, given his unique appearance, someone who seems like he was born to play iconic horror roles. And he's the founder of Zona. And at his age now, too, and just the way his face has always looked, and at his age, and with the makeup they're giving him to show that he's part of like a failed attempt to do the kind of thing they did with Murphy, he just has this haggard, you know, wan look, and yet he's still wonderfully creepy. And I also have to say, at the age he is now, he's starting to look more and more like Boris Karloff. And I never used to quite see that in him, but I'm seeing more of it in him now. And I think it's kind of awesome that it's almost like you get two for the price of one. You got Michael Berryman and a little bit of Karloff in there. And he's got it took me a while to notice that he's got this breathing apparatus that he keeps having to like huff oxygen on. And the breathing thing is an upside down skull that he puts on his face. So the kudos again to everybody on this show who handles things like the design, the art direction, the makeup. This show is a tour de force from a group that clearly continues to do a great deal with not as much as you would get on another network or on another show necessarily. And it's beautiful stuff. And in the case of like every new character that they introduce, they always have these little touches. I mean, like even Addie's new outfit, a lot of stuff like the costume design, everything's fantastic. Even Murphy's creepy 50s outfit is great. So Michael Berryman, we don't know what's going on with him necessarily or the rest of Zona, but we do know that they're probably on an island because, oh, and that, and I lost my train of thought earlier. I mentioned there were two things that I said made Warren the center.
Mm-hmm.
One was the part about him, her being our POV character at the beginning and waking up. The second is that great visual that a lot of people have been sharing on Twitter when she tries to escape at the end, only for her and us to find out that there's no escape, that they're at the ocean, which, by the way, also reminded me of a movie, Face Off, where Nicolas Cage tries to escape from a prison, only to find out it's like on an oil rig out in the ocean. And, but when she does that, right before she does that, we see a sign on the wall that's a sign that says something like, if you're bitten, here's what you have to do. And it's like this creepy list of things about, you know, amputate the limb, do that. And then at the end of the list, it says, if all else fails, and it has a red arrow pointing to a gun in a, like an emergency, break this for emergency, except that the way the shot is framed in that moment at the end of the list where the arrow points if all else fails, the arrow is actually visually pointing to Warren, which I cannot believe was not deliberate. But if it wasn't, it is a brilliant, happy accident that makes thematically that moment perfect because it says, if you have no one else to trust in this show, Warren's the one. She's the one that's going to get us through this.
And she's the one who wakes up in what should be considered paradise after, you know, scraping their way across the U.S. and fighting every manner of zombie and human. And instantly, she can tell, no, something's not quite right here, that she is finely tuned to call out the BS, that, like, you can't put one over on her. And, like, Murphy, despite everything that they've been through, he still, I think, in his heart of hearts, is just someone who's always wanted to be part of that good life. And now he is part of that good life, and he's not asking any questions about why he's part of that good life. Because, I mean, the reason he was in prison in the first place is for being a con man, you know, and you're not really a con man unless you're trying to con your way up a step.
I remember also that you weren't too happy last year with how much they took him sort of into the role of supervillain. And that felt like took him a little too far. This feels like he might be dialed back quite a bit now, more in the sort of like gleefully ignorant Dr. Smith kind of bumbling, you know, interfering fool kind of thing, which I feel is like a sweet spot for the character. And maybe we've lost a little of that, the supervillain part.
I hope so. I mean, if there is something nefarious going on at Zona, which, I mean, let's be honest with ourselves, there's something nefarious going on at Zona. It's not like we're gonna find out halfway through the season like everyone else is fighting to destroy Zona and it really is this last utopia that is gonna save humanity.
Right.
No, there's something not right about that place. And very obviously Murphy is not in on it.
It's no,
like whatever it is that's going on.
He's clueless.
He's completely clueless. He just thinks, man, did I luck out here.
And I also would like to add that we'd be totally remiss in covering this episode if we didn't mention the very fact of why it's called Warren's Dream, which is in the midst of us talking about Warren being our center. There's that little element of her seeming to be unhinged after a coma in that she's had these visions. And of course, it leads to that really great moment where they bring out the zombie face cake and she just goes completely insane on the cake. But weird stuff where you pointed out, it looks like there's an actual arc of bodies, maybe zombie bodies in the distance in that one vision she has. And we see what looks like a manta ray flying in the sky. And the thing is, the one thing I have a problem with, like on the slightly more academic side, which of course is part of what I do, is that sometimes I think shows and movies try often too hard to seem clever or to make their audience feel that they're clever by giving them things to decode which might either be A, too easy, or B, too confounding just for the sake of it. And I'm always a little leery of dream sequences and visions because it's like, well, they want you to start figuring out what the manta ray means or what this, and there's probably going to be a character later called Ray and it'll be a manta or something, you know. And
or it's just because they're on an island.
Or maybe that, you know, and it could also be that this works out pretty well as a nice way to underscore certain beats and what Warren discovers. But there's a weirdness going through this. And obviously, this is a show that has dabbled heavily in weirdness that warps its own reality. I've often gone on and on about how I feel how important it is for a story to maintain its own particular internal sense of reality. And I feel Z Nation, in a way, almost has an immunity to that because they've long ago proven that they can warp their reality. One of my favorite moments still was a couple of years ago where Doc was dying and his spirit leaves his body. He floats up and his spirit sees a knife at the top of the bookshelf and realizes that's something he can use to save himself. And there's no other way of reading that scene except that he's genuinely going through that moment. And it's like, well, then this show is, there's magic. That's it, you know. So I guess, you know, Warren's seeing a manta.
What you could say is rather than call it magic, call it a mutation.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, there's a lot that kind of centers around the idea of mutation, that Murphy's mutating through many phases. And even in this episode, right at the end, they are hinting that, in fact, maybe even the zombies are mutating.
Yes.
That they give a zombie a headshot and it gets back up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are constantly mutating. There's all kinds of stuff just going on. They've had many different kinds of zombies. There were the ones that had sort of been planted in the soil and grew things out of them. There were the ones that weirdly crab walked. There were the
blaster zombies.
The zombies on various medications at the pharmaceutical factory.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So, yes, on the one hand, it does seem kind of magical. But on the other hand, you have that sort of extra creepy guy from the dinner party who's experimenting on his very own zombie hand back in his lab. And that involves putting some substance on it that causes it to sort of crackle as if it is caught on fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, Warren's visions are all taking place in this place of fire.
She catches fire and burns.
So yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, she's been in a coma for 2 years.
But she could also have heard things or
she could have heard things or she could have even had some of whatever substances they're working on pass through her system.
Okay.
Or even more creepy, perhaps they've used her blood to develop something that they're trying to weaponize.
Very good.
So
it's also even conceivable that she really hasn't been in a coma for 2 years all the way through or that length of time
that
at
they
all.
Told Murphy she was in a coma, yeah, but she may have been in and out of this little Ziploc bag that they had her in.
Yeah, she's in this weird sort of cocoon kind of thing. There's something going on there, too. So, I mean, I guess ultimately what it comes down to, there's one other thing about the zombies. You mentioned the mutation. There's also a weird mention at one point where they, I think it might have been Michael Berryman's character, mentioned something just briefly in passing about, you know, do we wait for all the zombies to die of starvation? And by any basic standards of the usual reanimated corpse flesh eater or brain eater, they don't die of starvation. Dying of starvation was what the living infected in something like 28 Days Later do. So I found that mention a little odd, either as yet another example of how the zombies in Z Nation are quite a bit different, which is certainly possible given all the other rules that they've twisted and broken, which is, again, fine, or it's just meant to be his own misconception of what's going on.
Or option three, it proves my point that the founders of Zona were the ones that instigated this whole thing, and he knows something we don't about the nature of whatever caused this outbreak to begin with.
Very nice.
I mean, they delve into it a little bit in, I guess maybe was it the second season? Might have been the third, about all of the experiments that were being done that kind of resulted
yes.
in the viral strain.
When we saw like the flashback with my namesake, Doctor the Dead, with Kurian and all
yeah.
that. Yeah, right. That's right.
But we don't really know why he was doing what he was doing, and it certainly could have been under instruction from someone else who was paying him for that research.
Sure.
And really the only person who could pay someone to fly all over the world and do that kind of research is somebody who was just sitting on top of a huge pile of money, hence Zona. So, I mean, I think, I don't know if they were thinking of it at the time when they brought Kurian in there, but I think that now they are at least attempting to create a more elaborate sort of
backstory.
Yeah, like a whole sort of structured, I don't know, like a structured beginning of all of this, that it wasn't just some fluke. It wasn't just he was trying something out and one of the people he was experimenting on, you know, ran out of the room and something bad happened. That there was something much more organized and intentional behind all of this.
Well, we'll certainly see as the season goes on. And I'll just mention, I can't think of anything else significant to talk about the episode unless you had anything you were thinking of.
No, really just, I guess, a question that I've been kicking around that I can't quite figure out, which is, how does everyone know about Numerica?
Like, yeah.
How is that information getting out to everyone? It's not like you can just send out an email.
It could have been as easy as just establishing that people were like picking it up on an old radio signal or something.
Yeah,
but that,
in the same way
really
that Citizen Z was broadcasting out.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But they just kind of presented it as fact, beginning that they're all gathering there to go to Numerica.
Well, like a lot of things that have happened in that first episode, I'm not discounting the possibility, like with the Addie and Lucy thing, for instance, with the bite. We'll probably be getting some fill-in flashbacks in upcoming episodes to try to catch us up on some things that happened. I wouldn't be surprised. So maybe the idea of how the Numerica thing started to disseminate might also come up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'll just mention a couple quick shout-outs, though, for this episode. The only other things I can think of is nice return of the zombie ball, the ball of zombies eating zombies, which last appeared nearly a year ago in episode 2 of season 3, which was called A New Mission. And given that season 3 spent a lot of its time getting a lot more serious, I like the reappearance of the zombie ball as perhaps a signal, too, that Z Nation is, if not necessarily re-embracing like it needed to, but certainly very keenly aware of its sense of goofiness, which is one of the things that the show has always been great for. So that's nice. One thing this show needs, it's to maintain its sense of humor, even as it continues to build on its drama. And in keeping with that, I also love the fact that we join Murphy just as he's finishing telling everybody the aristocrats joke. I just think that's perfect in so many ways. This is a nice touch.
I think also what's perfect is that Murphy's been there for 2 years.
And he didn't tell them the joke
yet. He hasn't told them the joke yet. And also they react as if they've never heard the joke before, which is fascinating to me because there's kind of like the, I don't know, it's like a double-edged thing of like he's telling the aristocrats to aristocrats.
Yes. Yeah.
And they don't see the irony in that.
You know, one other thing just occurred to me, and then we'll wrap it up. Given Murphy's development over the years, it almost makes me sad that we didn't get more of a nod at some point in this episode between him and Warren that he's more keenly aware of something weird going on than it seems he is. It's almost like too much of a dial back from his more malevolent and calculated persona to suddenly be somebody so completely clueless that he wouldn't get the idea something's going on. And it's kind of a shame in a way. It feels like we may have actually lost a little bit of an intelligence to him unless they somehow switch that up at some point. So we'll see, I guess.
I'm really only time can tell.
Right. I think we both agree, though. The time shift has actually worked in the show's favor so far as a nice restart.
I think so. It just allowed us to, I guess, account for people being in different places and gave them the space they needed to introduce us to Zona.
Mm-hmm.
And to have Murphy be able to be her guide to Zona.
Yeah.
Without it seeming odd, like he's only been there for a week, but he's the king of Zona. Like, he's been there for a while and he's had a chance to circulate.
Right. Well, that just about does it, I think, for this episode. And first of all, I'd like to thank Natalie for joining me for Doctor of the Dead. And I think we're going to have fun doing this for the foreseeable future and keeping it going. I'd like to thank everybody who's listening for sticking with us during a period of time where we really had quite a bit of a break. And I certainly hope everyone has either kept following us or has rejoined us to listen to everything we have to say as Z Nation continues. And that will certainly not be it, because as anybody who knows our past episodes knows, we cover a wide array of things. We have a number of films on deck that I have been long waiting to talk about, including some things like, well, Doctor of the Dead never got a chance to really do an episode about Train to Busan. So I'd like to do something about that and the animated prequel Soul Station. We have Girl with All the Gifts. And oh, my God, at least a dozen really, really horrible movies that I'm sure we'll have fun talking about, too, when we get to them. So there's a lot coming up. Check us out on iTunes. We will continue to post all the new episodes on g2vpodcast.com or drthedead.com. We'll get you there, too. We have our Facebook page at G2V Productions, where you'll be able to find out all the latest there as well. And I'm just going to do one final plug, which is if you go over to my small press company's site, ATB Publishing, we have the very first ever line of Doctor of the Dead enamel pins, which include Doctor of the Dead logo pins, as well as three other pins that are inspired by classic zombie movies. So I encourage you to check out the atbpublishing.com site and check out the shop for the pins, all designed by me and all based around our mutual love of zombies. So until the next episode, thanks for listening.
And that'll do it for this episode of Doctor of the Dead. Find a complete archive of this show, along with many other podcasts, at itunes.com/G2V. Be sure to subscribe for the latest episodes. And if you like what you hear, rate and review. On Twitter, follow Arnold at Doctor of the Dead and Natalie at NB Latovsky. Doctor of the Dead is a G2V and ATB Publishing production.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.